will be discussing how Atonement, which was published in 2001, and Sweet Tooth, which was published in 2012, explore the formative and transformative effects of trauma on the human psyche, as well as the question of authorship as a process which emerges from individual traumatic experiences. So in my opinion, Ian McEwan explores how two characters, which are Bryony Tallis and Tom Haley, understand fiction as something beyond escapism, something that helps them shape their moral beliefs, and as something that ultimately shapes their identities. The act of fiction for them becomes a coping mechanism for the trauma they have experienced. For their development as characters, and especially during the codas of both texts, Tallis and Haley show an almost ruthless intent on becoming authors. They attempt to use their writing experiences to modify reality, rising at the end of their narratives as triumphant authors through the use of metafiction. My aim in this paper is to suggest that such endeavor stems from a set of traumatic experiences, as I just mentioned, that each has gone through. In these cases, trauma provides the characters with experiences that are beyond their control, situations they are not ready to deal with, and more specifically, situations that they have not been equipped to deal with through the use of literature. McEwan seems to have built both novels as reactions to postmodern literary criticism, as they are built to reveal a twist that attributes authorship to a different character than previously thought, making readers aware that they have been reading what they have been reading is not a published novel, but a manuscript. And this highlights to the reader that the author can hold power over a text until the very end. I believe that both novels are fixated on providing an insight into the power of fiction and how fiction can affect human identity. My theory, as I just mentioned, is that the main theme in both novels is the exploration of how authorship is constructed, and which in this case is most importantly or majorly through the reworking of trauma. By giving such authorial power to his characters, McEwan is setting his work in opposition to the infamous The Death of the Author by Roland Barthes, because Bryony and Tom are not mere scripters without taste, passions, or history, as Barthes suggested the modern scripter or modern writer to be, but they are quite the opposite. Bryony and Tom are authors that experience their stories with such a passion that they feel compelled to maintain the power over their text until the end. Their texts become imposed with an authorial identity, therefore, that is slightly more similar to what Michel Foucault referred to in What is an Author? And I quote Foucault now. It says, The author's name characterizes a particular manner of existence of discourse. Discourse that possesses an author's name is not to be immediately consumed and forgotten, neither is it accorded the momentary attention given to ordinary fleeting words. So Bryony and Tom's readers cannot consume and forget what they have just read. They have to become accomplices to the experience that has taken place. In the article Trauma Culture, Hal Foster describes trauma as an experience that is not experienced, at least not punctually, that comes too early or too late. That was a quote. If one understands trauma from its original meaning, which is a wound or something that proves difficult to experience, it can be concluded that Tom and Bryony go through traumatic events. Daniela Pitt, in turn, argues that trauma is recreated repeatedly by its victims as an attempt of dealing with it, processing it, and letting it go. And I quote Pitt now, and she says, "There is a tendency for a compulsive repetition of violence in the form of nightmares, actions, and imitation, which disables the victim to gain distance from the original moment of horror. Violence and horror subsequently become normative codes of behavior, replacing any former pre-traumatic behavior." So Bryony and Tom imitate these moments of horror they have experienced by committing what I call violent narratorial acts. And their trauma, as Hal Foster suggests, must be acted out compulsively or reconstructed after the fact, almost analytically. Moreover, the process of writing in itself seems to be the most fitting or almost perfect option to deal with trauma, because it demands a constant and relentless process of researching, drafting, writing, and editing. And it turns into an almost never-ending exploration of a single experience. It turns into an almost experience of psychoanalysis. So as authors in process, both experience trauma while they are witnessing something. The way they witness the world, however, is through the layered prism of literature. So the writing process is therefore always conditioned by their reading history. And this is where their trauma and their literary endeavors cross. The act of witnessing becomes a vital part of not only their identity or how they understand themselves, but of the writing process. So during their development as authors, they are witness to an event they should not have witnessed, and consequently they incorporate that event into the writing process. And by the addition of a metafictional twist into their own work of literature, they therefore assimilate their trauma, and which allows them to regain the control they lost in the situations where they experienced their trauma. My suggested moments of trauma are as follows. Bryony witnesses a scene in a fountain between her sister Cecilia and Robbie that she does not understand, probably due to her young age and innocence. And subsequently, she witnesses two further scenes that solidify her traumatic experience. First, she reads a note that contains adult language. And second, she witnesses Cecilia and Robbie having intercourse in the library. Beginning with the moment at the fountain, Bryony's sense of reality is shattered, as Robbie and Cecilia are not acting like the characters that she's used to reading and writing about. And as a result, she has no narrative discourse to attach to their behavior, and she perceives these acts as threatening. Tom Haley, conversely, is hauled from the depths of innocence and anonymity to popularity by a woman, his protagonist, Serena Froom. And at the time of meeting her, however, he seems to already be undergoing a period of trauma because he has a writer's block. The previous trauma is unbeknown to the reader, but however, in this instance, there seems to be a combination of both moments of trauma. The discovery that Serena has betrayed him, which is a second moment of trauma, is what Tom uses to attempt to fight his writer's block. He verbalizes it to Serena by using the metaphor of the white sheets he has left behind in what became their home. And I quote from Sweet Tooth, "The blank page read large and sensual. I spent most of December staring at that blank page. I thought I was falling in love, but I couldn't summon a useful thought," unquote. So at the core of trauma is silence, the impossibility to speak out the traumatic event, and therefore to rationalize it. So a white sheet or a blank page are the most appropriate metaphors for silence, and therefore writer's block is a powerful symbol for the impossibility to speak out a trauma. Laurie Bickroy says, and I quote, "Traumatic experience can produce a sometimes indelible effect on the human psyche that can change the nature of an individual's memory, self-recognition, and relational life. Despite the human capacity to survive and adapt, traumatic experience can alter people's psychological, biological, and social equilibrium to such a degree that the memory of one particular event comes to taint all other experiences." So after experiencing traumatic events, both Bryony and Tom become dissociated from their own identities and their rationality. So following this loss, they experience moments of redefinition. Bryony cannot be a child anymore, so she must become what she always had in mind to become, which is an author, and neither can Tom. He cannot continue with his life of alleged mediocre writing and teaching. He must fully embrace his authorship and write what he believes will be his masterpiece. The moments experienced which lead to this epiphany must not be left behind. As Fellman and Lopp argue, and I quote, "For traumatic memory to lose its power as a fragment and symptom and for it to be integrated into memory, a form of narrative reconstruction or re-externalization has to occur," unquote. So both Bryony and Tom integrate their traumas by feeding them into their creative needs, by reinforcing a new part of their identity, and they do so by using the material that has reshaped them. So the embracing of a new identity is not an attempt at eradicating their past selves, but at regaining control through the means of fiction. Interestingly, the writing process that deals with trauma requires the reader's involvement in order to come full circle. So as Bickroy again suggests, and I quote, "For healing to take place, survivors must find ways to tell their stories and to receive some social acknowledgement, if not acceptance." So this is done in both novels through the use of metafiction, given that the main characteristic of metafiction, or one of the main characteristics, is that it demands an active involvement from the reader, be it in terms of the act of rereading or by a constant and active questioning of what is being read or what is being explored. So as authors Brian and Tom not only want the power from their texts, which they obtain by withholding the truth of their text until the very end, but they also want readers that become completely invested in their narratives. So this desire stems from the fact that their narratives are not mere attempts at entertainment, but to them, these narratives are matters of life and death. In Atonement, in the code of the novel, Brian states that there have been half a dozen drafts of the story in between the first and the last. And she describes her novel, and I quote, as a 59-year assignment, unquote. One she set up to complete after she committed what she describes as her crime, and then she goes on to say that she made it her, and I quote, duty to disguise nothing, the names, the places, the exact circumstances, as a matter of historical record. So Bryony has dedicated her whole life to her manuscript, and she seems to be aware that her actions continue to affect and shape history. And the way that she describes her violent act of writing inevitably highlights how important it is for her to be narrating her story. It seems undeniable that the reaction she had upon experiencing a traumatic experience has reinforced her identity as an author. Bryony and Tom seek refuge in fiction. So if the fiction they have read throughout their lives has not been able to provide them with the answers they were seeking, they can create their own fiction and go as far as to rewrite their lives and transform them into a fictional alternative of what would seem right for them. So Bryony emerges as a godlike author figure when she revealed that she chose to stick with fictionalized fates for Cecilia and Robbie, despite her interest for historical accuracy that she herself mentions, even after six different drafts of the same manuscript. That's also seen by the act of confessing to the readers that they have been reading a manuscript and that such manuscript is not ultimately not representative of the truth. So she excuses herself by saying that as an author, she found the creative license necessary. And after all, she says, and I quote, how could that constitute an ending? What sense or hope or satisfaction could a reader draw from such an account? Unquote. So by doing so, she establishes her authorial power, deciding on the fates of her characters according to what she believes constitutes a good narrative. She also establishes the notion that the author might know better than the reader. She assumes what constitutes a satisfactory read. And most importantly, she imposes her fiction as fact. She provides her narrative with the power to surpass reality. Her Atonement, which is done through writing, is an attempt at changing history. And by the impending act of publication, Robbie and Cecilia, as Bryony says, and I quote, will only exist as her inventions. The answer is simple. The lovers survive and flourish as long as there is a single copy, a solitary manuscript, a typescript of my final draft. Then my spontaneous, fruitious sister and her medical prince survive to love. So by transforming trauma into a narrative, Bryony ruthlessly exploits her authorship. Unlike Bryony, in Sweet Tooth, the character-turned-author does not address the reader. He addresses Serena Froom, the protagonist. But Tom exudes a sense of oblivion after having completed his violent narratorial act. He pours over his own office, which in this case was his apartment with Serena, and he says, and I quote, I suppose I was cleaning up for myself. I'm bringing this episode to an end, and there's always a degree of oblivion in tidiness, unquote. So Tom needs to erase his past identity, but also Serena's past identity. In the process of becoming an author, he erases Serena as he met her, as with his writing act, he also wishes to rewrite the past. So just as Bryony chooses a different fate for Robbie and Cecilia, Tom chooses a different version of Serena, leaving the real one behind and moving forward, with his fictionalized version of her. I quote Sweet Tooth. It says, I had to clear the decks before I could write this letter, and perhaps, do I say this to you, with all this scrubbing, I was erasing you, you as you were, unquote. So by Tom's act of publication, he will leave his traumatized self behind, and fully embrace an identity, he can take us new. So if Bryony dictates truth by deciding what her readers would benefit from, Tom does it through his depiction of Serena. And I think it's doubtful that he's attempting to start a philosophical debate about the identity or freedom of his subject. Rather, he seems to be proud of being able to dictate Serena's identity, which is another symptom of the godlike author figure I mentioned a few seconds ago. In Tom's confession, it can also be seen that the inspiration for his narrative was not rooted in a moment of revelation, but rather a moment of anger. Tom writes out of rage, which can be easily connected to trauma. He says, and I quote, "I should tell you that in that hour, if your lovely pale throat had appeared upturned on my lap and a knife had been pushed into my hand, I would have done the job without thinking," unquote. So the hatred Tom feels for Serena is something that builds up, and he knows that he must commit some act of revenge against her. The act, however, is done through language, through fiction. Just as he chooses to fictionalize her through narrative, he then destroys her through text, through the act of publication. So trauma victims must reinvent themselves to differ from the individuals they were when they suffered their traumatic experience. Tom rises from the ashes of his old self as a renewed, stronger author. He describes it as an episode, and I quote, "of pure existence." And after such a moment of awakening, he takes the reins of his identity with a passion that has been previously unknown to him. And he assumes possession of the moment by writing about it. He says, and I quote, "my task was to reconstruct myself through the prism of your consciousness," unquote. Bryony, in turn, describes her experience as an act of kindness. And she says, I quote, "a stand against oblivion and despair." And she says that by letting her sister and Robbie live, she gives them happiness. Interestingly, she finishes what has been her life's work by saying that now she must sleep. So it's almost as though she's at peace. She has finished her draft, her novel, her manuscript. Now she's at peace and can sleep. Ultimately, both Bryony and Tom are successful in their metamorphosis into authors by their ability to repossess the moments in which they lost control. And most importantly, it is through the use of metafiction that they obtain such a result. In Ian McEwan's texts, I believe metafiction develops as a form of imposing power into a narrative or an audience. Penning their narratives has not been enough, so they must impose their power, the way power was imposed on them, rendering them powerless. It's interesting that at the end of both narratives, both characters emerge as victorious. They don't feel guilt, shame, or pain anymore. They feel that they have triumphed in their publication. So they are focusing only on their achieved identity and on the publication of their text. So my conclusion is that McEwan depicts a journey towards authorship that is capable of reclaiming trauma, reestablishing an individual's identity, and ultimately repossessing truth. And that's it. Thank you very much.